Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
So pleased you tuned into Radical Philosophy. I'm your host, Beth Matthews. Today on the program, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Nancy Segal about twin research and human genetics. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And could you give us some background information about yourself?
Well, yes. I'm a professor of psychology at California State University, Fullerton. I'm also the director and founder of the Twin Studies Center, a unit in our department that supports my research, the research of my colleagues and students, and we disseminate interesting information to the public upon demand, of course, but we like to stay active and present at conferences and publish and things of that sort. I've written 9 books on twins and just submitted my 10th manuscript and about to start another one.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So what was it that inspired your interest in twins?
Well, what inspired my interest in twins is the fact that I'm a twin. I have a sister who looks nothing like me. We are fraternal twins, and we are very different. But I was always fascinated with how different we were, as opposed to how similar some other twins are. I realized as a child that we grew up together, had the same parents, went to the same school, and had many friends in common. But we were just very different children. And so when I got to college, and I began to study genetics and biology and more in college, I really got fascinated with twin relationships and twin development in general. And actually, what really triggered it was when I was a senior in college and I was asked to do an essay on some form of personal adjustment for an abnormal psychology class. And I wrote about twins being separated in school, which was a very traumatic experience for me back in kindergarten when I was 4 years old. And I found that I enjoyed writing the paper and reading the literature in a way that no other topic had tantalized me. And I knew from then on that twin research would be my chosen field.
Yes, that's obviously in America, it's probably the same as Australia. Some schools have a policy to separate twins and some schools don't separate them in class.
Yes, I really think that there should be no policy whatsoever. I think that you should take each pair as it comes. Some are ready to separate, some aren't. Some need a little more time. I just think that just as though there's no one policy for how you manage the circumstances of single children, I don't know why schools impose these mandatory separation policies, and some of them are really unwilling to cooperate with parents who I think have a much better sense of what's best for their children. So I really go to bat for the no child policy, which I think really serves twins very well.
For sure. So how many different types of twins are there?
Well, there are basically two main types. The identical twins who share all their genes, having split from a single fertilized egg within the first 2 weeks after conception. And then you have the fraternal twins who genetically are like ordinary siblings, brothers and sisters, but they result when a woman releases two eggs at the same time and they're separately fertilized by two separate sperm. But within those two types, there are a number of variations. With identical twins, you sometimes have about 25% that show mirror image reversals in handedness or in eye dominance or in birthmarks and moles. With fraternal twins, you can have same-sex ones or you can have opposite-sex ones. You can have twins with different fathers but with the same mother. For example, if the woman releases two eggs and they're separately fertilized by two separate men close in time, you can get what we call superfecundated twins that share mothers but not fathers. So they're all very interesting variations, and there's even more I could talk about, but I would take up your entire time if I did.
Could you tell us about accidental brothers and the power of nature and nurture?
Yeah, well, Accidental Brothers is a book that I wrote in 2018. And it was a story I just had to go down to Bogota, Colombia to cover once I heard about it. What happened was that two sets of identical male twins were born within a day of each other, one pair in the lively capital city of Bogota, and another in a very rural area, way up in the north, about 100 miles north of Bogota. And one of the northern twins was very sick at birth, so his grandmother brought him to the very much better hospital down in Bogota. And after a week, they said he was ready to go home, but they accidentally gave his aunt, who was bringing him back, a child from the other twin pair. So here you ended up with two sets of the same genetic combination of unrelated brothers, one in the city, one in the country, who thought they were fraternal twins when in fact they were unrelated same-age children, what I call virtual twins. That's a whole other twin category we could talk about. But they lived like this as allegedly fraternal twins for 25 years until somebody came to Bogota where the rural brothers had moved down to be butchers, and she went into the butcher shop where they happened to be working and confused one of the guys for her good friend, and one thing led to another, and then they realized at the age of 25 that there'd been a terrible mix-up. So it was quite traumatic, especially for the ones who had been switched, but now they are all very good friends. They come to terms with this, and they really are just charming, charming people. I went down to Bogota twice, and I tested their personalities, their intelligence levels, their twinship, many, many things. It was a fascinating project that I took on.
Yeah, it would have been. So did it have a, sorry to ask you about the end of the book, but did it have a happy ending? Did they all sort of get along?
Yes, it had a very happy ending. See, initially, the two switched brothers didn't get along. They kind of felt resentful if the other one took their place. Although the one who should have been in the city but was in the country, he really was unhappy because he craved an education which he couldn't get, and he never met his parents who had died before the reunion took place. The one up in Bogota who should have been in the north was actually, in a way, in the beginning, almost relieved that he hadn't grown up in the rural country because he liked having his degrees, he liked his clothing, he liked the life of the city. But he was almost ashamed and horrified at the life he might have had. Of course, if he lived there, he wouldn't have known anything different, so it's hard to say. But anyway, the ending was great. They all get along fine now. And one thing I did learn I think was very important is that I usually see behavioral development through a genetic lens. And of course, I know the environment affects everything, but I've been so impressed with reared apart twins and how similar they are. But these guys were a little different because the ones raised together in the city and the one raised together in the country were more like their unrelated brother in some ways, in ability and kind of outlook, than the ones they were really related to. And I think that's a great example of how environments can overwhelm genetics sometimes. It was a very extreme environment that each one lived in. And so particularly the ones in the rural area who had no access to education. And so even though he craved an education, he simply couldn't get one. So there was no way he could have done better academically than his experience allowed.
God, that's absolutely fascinating. So what do twin studies tell us about sexualities?
Well, they tell us a lot. We know from twin studies that homosexuality has a partial genetic component to it, a little bit higher in males, maybe 30 to 40%, a little lower in females, 10 to 20%.
Tell us about your most memorable twin study case.
Oh, now there are so many. Well, I guess the most memorable one would be the case of Jack and Oscar. They were born in 1933 in Trinidad to a Jewish Romanian father and a Catholic German mother who met on a ship. And so the boys were born in Trinidad. And then when the marriage soured, Jack stayed with his father in Trinidad and was raised Jewish, and Oscar went back to Germany with his mother. And of course, that was when the Nazis were in power, and Oscar eventually was in the Hitler Youth. Of course, each boy knew they had a twin because each was raised with a different parent. And so they met at about the age of 20, and they didn't get along at all. They had very different political and historical understandings. Then when the Minnesota Study of Twins Raised Apart got formed in 79, they'd heard about it. They decided that in their early 40s, they would give their relationship another chance. And Really, they got along fairly well, although it was kind of a love-hate relationship, and there were certain topics they couldn't really talk about. Oscar was never a Nazi. He was only 12 when the war ended. He was just always looking for the right path. And what was interesting about them is two things. One is that Jack was very concerned that somebody would discover his German roots in Trinidad, so he became very pro-British. Oscar was disturbed that somebody might discover his Jewish roots in Germany, so he became very pro-German. So the content of the reaction was different, but the approach was the same. So that's very interesting. The other thing is that the twins spoke and they realized that had their positions been reversed, they each would have adopted the philosophy and understandings and beliefs of the system of thought that they currently loathed. And that's, an interesting finding to think that, you couldn't imagine. I mean, Jack couldn't imagine being pro-German, and yet he would have been had he been raised in Oscar's family.
Yes, that's right. I think I have actually read about that case over the years, and I think it was Jack who was brought up very strictly, and Oscar who had a very carefree sort of
No,
life.
no, no,
It was the other
no.
way around.
Just the opposite. Jack had the more carefree existence, and Oscar was much more a strict background. His grandmother brought him up, and it was quite strict. I think what that case shows, as do all the reared apart identical twin cases, is a life unlived. It gives you a sense of what you might have been in different circumstances. Now, all of us can imagine how our life might have turned out had we gone to a different college or taken a different class or lived in a different neighborhood or maybe married somebody else, taken a different job. We can imagine these things, but identical twins are the only people on the planet who can actually see it.
Yeah, that's right. It's quite fascinating. So did they end up getting along in the end when they were in their 40s?
Yes, they did. As I said, it was a love-hate relationship, but they clearly were fascinated by each other and their similarities. And they would sometimes fight and then vow never to see each other again, but they always did. And then Oscar passed away before Jack, and it was very traumatic for Oscar. It was a big loss. He had a lot of trouble coping with it. And the interesting thing was he did not go to Germany for the funeral because he reasoned, and probably correctly, that he would have been a living reminder to everybody of the person who wasn't there. So it was probably better that he stayed home.
Oh, that was very sensitive of him to think that. That's
Yes, it
yeah,
was.
it really was. Yeah. So, are there ethical issues behind the separation of twins?
Well, I think there are. I think it's absolutely unconscionable and unethical to separate twins. And, there was a study that was started in New York City in the 1960s, which I've written about a lot in my book, Deliberately Divided. And what happened there was there was an adoption agency called Louise Wise Services, and there was a rather misguided psychiatric consultant, Dr. Viola Bernard, who felt it was much better for twins to be separated because they could develop their own identities and not overburden their parents. And so when unmarried Jewish girls would come and have twins, a lot of times they wanted the twins together, but they were told that families wouldn't want twins, which was ridiculous. Families did request them. But at any rate, the twins are placed apart in separate families. At least the identicals and fraternals were, but only the identicals were studied. And they were tracked secretly without the parents knowing that they were raising a single twin child. And when they turned 12, the study stopped, but then it all got exposed when these identical triplets met for the first time at age 19 through mistaken identity. I have researched this more closely than anybody. I have a book that has the history of the study, interviews with all the twins, interviews with a lot of the colleagues, with the investigators, their attempts to write a book. Where we are now, the ethics, I mean, all kinds of things are in that book. And I think that it is just unconscionable to separate twins. I know, having witnessed many reunions, just how joyful it is and how sad it is for twins to look back on their lives and realize that they could have had this wonderfully close, celebrated relationship. Now, I know that sometimes it happens that families can't afford to raise two, that happens, but in this particular case, the twins were purposely separated, and families who were well off and wanting to take two were told that there were no twins available.
Yeah, I think with that study too, I think they almost purposely put one into a wealthy family and one into an underprivileged family to sort of study the effect of had.
Well, there was some suggestion they did that for the triplets because one of the identicals was put into a fairly wealthy home in a very posh New York suburb, another kind of a middle class, and another in a somewhat lower middle. But that could have been by chance. I mean, it's hard to know. It's really hard to know if that was done systematically. What was done systematically, though, was that the children were placed in homes where they were younger by 3 years than an opposite sex sibling. And usually that opposite sex sibling was also adopted through Louise Wise. And why did they do that? Ironically, they didn't want the children to be only children, which makes me insane because these were not only children to begin with. But they also knew that these parents had successfully adopted and were doing well after 3 years, so they wanted good homes for these kids.
No, they certainly, no, I agree, they certainly shouldn't be separated. So, what do twins tell us about human behavior?
Well, they tell us that many more of our behaviors are genetically influenced than we would have realized. We knew for some time that personality had a genetic influence. We knew that intelligence did. We knew that height and weight and other physical measures. But things like social attitudes, religiosity, political activities, and many things like that, which you thought would come from the home, have been shown not to so much come from the home. We also learned from comparing identical twins raised apart and identical twins raised together that they have the same level of personality similarity. And that also seems strange, because you'd think that people raised together should be more alike, but they're not. What this tells us is that the reason we are similar to people with whom we live is our shared genes and not our shared environment. And the other way to approach that is to look at adoptees who grew up together many times from birth, and yet they end up being quite different.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even if I'm sure you would have heard about the case of the two Chinese girls that were identical twins that were adopted, and one lot of parents saw the other girl and said, "Look, I'm sure they're related," and after being told no, they weren't, they sort of pushed for testing, and they were identical twins, and they've managed to keep in touch with the other adoptive parents, and they visit quite regularly. And they
Yeah,
said,
well, there are several pairs like that. I'm not sure exactly which ones you're referring to, but I have a study ongoing of these Chinese twins who've been separated mostly through the one child policy. And what is really wonderful about these parents is that they understand the importance of twinship and they do make arrangements for the kids to meet periodically.
No, that's great. And now, before I ask you, is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't already covered? I'd actually like to say something. And it was when my daughter was in kindergarten, there was a set of fraternal twin girls. And it was, I mean, they were lovely kids. But once another parent said to their mother, "Oh, you dress them alike, don't you?" with not a very nice tone in her voice. And then the mother explained that when she was getting one dressed, if she put a skirt on one, the other one would just run and grab a skirt. They wanted to actually dress alike, but the mother made sure that she'd always buy, a blue and a purple t-shirt, never two blue t-shirts, so they couldn't dress identically. And I thought that was actually good because she was leaving that choice up to them, but they always chose similar clothes. And the other thing was, she said how she heard the twins saying one day, because one was noticeably taller than the other. And when people would say, "Are they sisters?" she'd say, "Oh, they're twins." And people would say, "But one's taller than the other." Or people would say, "But one's shorter than the other." And she said, "I heard them both speaking one day, and one said to the other, 'You know, when people say, but one's taller than the other, it makes me feel like a big clumsy oaf.' And the other twin said, well, when people say, but one's shorter than the other, it makes me feel like a silly little fool. And I thought, I think we have to be very mindful of what we say when we see twins, don't we?
Yes, we do. People make very thoughtless comparisons. They don't mean any harm, but they do inflict harm. And I think that particularly when a mother or a family has an older child followed by twins, that can be very difficult for the older child because twins just get attention. And I think that parents have to be very mindful, as do onlookers, to make sure that those single children get attention. It's difficult enough to be dethroned by another baby, but by twins or even triplets is very, very difficult. But yeah, people make unfair comparisons. They will say to the twins, who's smarter, who's prettier, I mean, who's more athletic. It's crazy. And I really do think that if twins have these kinds of issues, it's probably imposed by people outside the twinship rather than within the twinship itself.
Seems to be a very big thing too, because the most common question asked is, oh, who was born first? Which really doesn't have any relevance to on anything, does it?
No, it does have some relevance. First of all, it's usually, if it's a natural delivery, it does. If it's a C-section, it means nothing. But if it's a natural delivery, the twin who's born first is usually at less physical risk than the second-born twin. Second-born twin has is just subjected to more hazards, the way that the uterus contracts. It's just a more difficult birth. Now, for parents, sometimes parents assign tasks and roles in the family based on birth order. And to do that with people who are 2 minutes apart, I think is really silly and can create a lot of competition and ill will. In my case, I'm the shorter twin, and I always felt like the younger one just because I'm smaller. And then when my mother told us when we were seven, she wanted to avoid a fight, so she waited until we were seven, told me that I was the firstborn. So for about 2 minutes, I felt like the king of the planet. And after that, you know, we went back to our old roles. So unless parents make a big fuss, I studied a pair of twins once where the mother gave the house keys to the older twin and not to the younger twin. And I didn't understand the rationale. It seems to me they should have both had the keys or both not had the keys.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I mean, some people too can treat twins like they're one person. I remember reading about a case where the grandfather would say, would you like an apple? And the twins would say yes, and he'd cut the apple in half. And I thought, do people not realise they're two separate entities?
Yeah. Well, people tend to think of twins sometimes as one. But, you know, we talked earlier in the program about different types of twins, and I would just mention a few of the interesting cases that I study. I study, and if any of your listeners have such cases, let me know. Aside from the Chinese twins raised apart, I study virtual twins who are same-age, unrelated children raised together. And what's great about them is that they replicate twinship without a genetic link, so they give us a pure estimate of environmental influence. Ordinary adopted siblings are good, but they have different residential histories and they are different ages. So the virtual twins are much better. I also study doppelgangers, who are people who look a lot alike but are genetically unrelated. And I know that people expect doppelgangers to be very similar in personality, but I can tell you, having studied about 45 pairs, they're extremely different. Personality is in your brain, not in your face.
Yeah. Oh, that's really fascinating. And I was watching a program recently about the most identical twin, and they were explaining about facial features and how that can make your voice sort of quite similar.
Yes, I'm sure it does. I'm sure the formation of the mouth and the nose and many things related to speech, genetically influenced, can end up causing you to speak alike. But I've noticed that a lot of fraternal twins sound alike too. My sister and I do, and I've always been puzzled by that. So, because our faces are very different. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I'll tell you one fascinating thing is that we don't know what causes the fertilized egg to divide. We know a lot more about what causes fraternal twinning, but we don't know why a fertilized egg divides. We know that in some families, there may be a genetically influenced tendency for this, but the actual process that causes a division, we really don't know.
is that usually hereditary? I heard that fraternal twins are hereditary.
No, fraternal twins tend to run in families, but there's no hard and fast rule about that. Usually older mothers too have more fraternal twins because it's almost like a reproductive error in a way, because you're not supposed to release two eggs. The female womb is designed to bear one baby, not two.
All right. So is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't already covered?
Yeah, well, as I said, if anybody is interested in research participation, they can go to my website, which is drnancysiegeltwins.org. And I'm sure you've got my email address. People can Google me. My last name is Siegel, S-E-G-A-L, and you can always find my stuff. And my books are all online. So, yeah, I think we've probably covered a lot. All I can say is that twin research is a fascinating field, and I've been in it for years, and I'm as captivated now as I was on day one.
Yeah, well, it is really fascinating. Thanks so much for coming onto the program.
My pleasure.
And I've been speaking with Dr. Nancy Siegel about twin research and human genetics. That's all we have time for today. Hope you've enjoyed the program, and do tune in next month.